From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're talking about funding for the public schools in New Hanover County. That's over $300 million a year and hundreds of millions more for capital needs. That money comes from a complicated assortment of federal, state, and local sources, meaning three different levels of political uncertainty when it comes to funding. This year, the district faces what several board members have described as a triple whammy: a reduced county budget, a state budget in limbo, and long-term uncertainty around federal funding and the fate of the Department of Education. And then there's capital needs, like the nine-figure proposals to rehab or replace New Hanover High School. The campus has suffered generations of underinvestment and deferred maintenance, and those chickens have come home to roost. But that's only part of the district's facility needs, which could reach $1 billion. So on today's show, we're going to unpack where the money is and isn't coming from, what these budget shortfalls mean, and some suggestions for addressing the problem. And with me here to do that is my colleague, Rachel Keith, who has done a ton of reporting on this. Rachel, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, as I said, we've had a lot of reporting. You've had a lot of reporting on the local education budget, and we haven't had a chance to put it all in one place. And I think this is the time to do it. And there's kind of two big pieces. There's lots of moving pieces, but there's two big pieces. And that's the operational budget and then capital. So we're going to take these in two halves. And operational is what most people, I think, are talking about when they're talking about school funding. It's really like teacher pay, because most of what schools spend their money on in their operational budget, you know, their annual budget, is people.
And Dr. Christopher Barnes, who is the superintendent, has said that is 83% of their budget.
Right. So that gets paid for in a bunch of different ways, and there's holes in each one of those funding streams. So let's break this down. Christopher Barnes has said, I think there was a $13 million hole last year, and this year there's a $5.2 million hole.
That's correct.
And that's in the operational budget. So, like, that's sending checks to teachers and nurses and principals. How do we get here?
How did we get here? That's a big question. You'll see our reporting was accurate when we reported last budget cycle. It was $20 million, but of that $20 million, they were kind of not expecting the $13 million to go, but the $7 million they knew was going to be running out because of the COVID relief funding.
Right. You're going to hear about this a couple times during today's show, and that is there were a number of things that had been policy wants, the things that officials both at the county and the school board had wanted to do but just never had the money for. And when both ARPA funding, that's for the county, and ESSER funding, that was for the school,
That was the federal COVID relief.
That was the federal COVID relief packages. There were a lot of good programs I think a lot of people were fairly positive about. And that money was sort of running out in tranches. And last year we saw sort of the last batch of that fall away. So moving on, I think part of what's interesting here is that we've got, obviously, there's some divisive politics on both the County Board of Commissioners and the current school board. But the school board's job is to run the school district. And so whatever they think about state or federal or local funding policies, they're ultimately the ones sort of holding the bag for funding shortfalls.
So the school board is in charge of an over $300 million operating budget, and that comes from state, federal, and local funds. So last year, the state provided about 61% of that operating budget. The county supported 32%, and then federal money supported about 6%. And again, the school board is not in charge. They are in charge of that purse, but the county commission is the local funding source that releases those funds, the local property tax, to them. So they really do control those purse strings. And I talked to Pat Bradford about this. She is a Republican. She also oversees the finance and bond and capital committee. And this is her summation. I talked to her about a month ago about what's happening with all the funding.
They're always late to the party, or they just skip the party with funding public schools, in my opinion. I don't speak for the board, of course. That's just my opinion. And again, I don't want to be a cranky baby, but I feel like I'm on my knees with my hand out begging. And I'm begging at four different doors.
And so what she's referring to, who is late to the party? She was talking about the General Assembly. So again, 61%, the largest chunk does come from the state. And when she said four different doors, yes, that's the federal, local, and state. The fourth one would be the endowment, which we will talk about soon.
Yeah. You didn't think we were going to get through a whole newsroom on funding and not talk about the endowment.
Right. Correct. So those are the begging doors.
Right. And right now, what we've often heard is local school board officials asking for more and more from the state. We've heard Democrats and Republicans say the current way that the state allocates money, the allotment formula to schools, is out of whack or outdated. But we've also heard from some powerful folks in the General Assembly that they would actually like to provide less, and they would like the counties to provide more.
So yes, I was at a forum that I hosted in our local community, and Senator Michael Lee was on that forum. And he said that he would like to see 45% come from the state, 45% come from the local county commission. And we have heard that the local county commission thinks that they give way above and beyond, and they even dropped what they said they would fund for this year. So I don't know how that is going to happen in the future.
I mean, we can say whatever you think of the most recent New Hanover County budget, they certainly do provide above and beyond the required amount, and they fund more than a lot of other states. I don't think they're number one in the state out of all the counties, but they're in the top 10, I believe. Yeah, I mean, the overall question is, you know, where is this money going to come from? And I think that's not reassuring. And obviously, you know, Michael Lee is one senator, but he is, I believe, the third most powerful Republican in the state Senate, one of the most powerful people in Raleigh.
And he chairs the Senate Appropriations Committee that controls all the money, and he also chairs the Education Committee.
Yeah, so it's not a done deal. We're not saying that this is a new law, has not been signed or anything like that, but it gives you a sense of the attitude from Raleigh. So that said, let's talk about the state budget, because it is still a big question mark. And remember, the fiscal year started a month ago. On July 1st, Dr. Christopher Barnes had to have a budget that was ready to go. The county commissioners approved their amount of funding in June. And so now we're just sort of in the ocean without a map a little bit.
Yeah, from meetings this week, they are saying we don't have this yet. And so they can't really say positively how they're going to fill all of these holes that they're dealing with, which I'll talk about soon. But Barnes said he was going to give an update next week at the board meeting. And they are still kind of working this out, but they're all waiting on pins and needles for this budget to be passed.
Right. And you may have heard that this week, as we're recording this on Thursday, on the last day of July. And as of right now, the House has introduced what's called a mini budget, which does keep some of the gears of government turning. We've seen this many times when the House and Senate are at an impasse. Again, even though the General Assembly is controlled by Republicans in both houses, the House and Senate themselves do not agree. Dustin Hall and Phil Berger have been at loggerheads over a number of issues. So what this mini budget does is it keeps the lights on for a lot of things, and it funds what's called step pay increases. You know, you've been a law enforcement officer or a teacher for a certain amount of time, you automatically get a certain amount of increase, and that money has to be approved because the check has to clear. But what it doesn't do is resolve how much of a percentage increase, because there's two proposals, right?
Yes, that's correct. So the House has a 5%. And the Senate has a 3%. And we talked to Dr. Barnes, and he said, if the 5% gets passed, I don't know what we're going to do. And why is that? Of course, he wants the highest percent increase possible. So Governor Josh Stein proposed a 10% increase and to bring back master's pay. And why did he say that? Because the state only provides the percent increase for those state-funded positions from the allotment formula.
Right, but there's other teachers and other staff members who are working in the school district who wouldn't get those raises, and that would create kind of an unfair situation, right?
Yeah, because the local county commission funds those positions. And what I talked to him about was, all school districts in the state, if the state gives the raise, the local positions are going to get that raise as well. And again, you know, the state, it does provide for the increases in retirement benefits and health insurance costs, but they're not picking up the bill for those locally funded positions. That's on the local to do that.
So right now, the school district is going forward, assuming that the 3% raise is what's going to happen, which seems like a realistic guess, but it is a guess. And as of right now, you know, the General Assembly came back from recess, and they spent a lot of time in the week leading up to the recording of this podcast focusing on overriding Governor Josh Stein, Democratic Governor Josh Stein's vetoes. And it looks like they will probably leave, maybe with a mini budget approved, but without a budget deal, you know, an overall state budget deal. And the plan, as we've heard it right now, is to sort of come back once a month. And so that's what the school district is looking at, like sort of an uncertainty that every month they might get an answer. They might not. But that's not the only issue of state funding. Another thing that comes up almost every time we talk to people about funding is vouchers.
That's brought up by teachers. That's brought up by Governor Josh Stein and our previous governor, Roy Cooper. You know, we're starting to also see the federal government also provide incentives for private schools. So right now in the Senator Majority Leader Phil Berger is pushing that the state joins in on the tax write-off if you want to give scholarships to private schools. And he's saying on social media that the governor is not going to be buying into this, but he said that they were going to force him to do this. And if we look at last year, the spending amounts, if you lived in New Hanover County and you attended a private school and you got a voucher, that equated to $10 million from the state going into those schools. And if you look across the state, it was $432 million that went into those private schools. And as we know as well, if you've paid attention to the school budget, charter school funding has to come out of the public school budget, and that was about $7 million.
Right.
So that's hard for the school district to know that these other funding that they need is going elsewhere.
Right, and I think, in case you haven't followed this story, you know, charter schools are public schools under the law. Obviously, they're very different in some cases, but it's the funding stream that goes to public schools. Then some of that gets calved off and goes to charter schools. These are sort of a sliding scale based on the family's income. And you basically—
The vouchers, correct.
The vouchers, yeah. And you basically get a check to help support your student going to private school. The argument is that, you know, this is your taxpayer money and it should follow your student. Obviously, that's controversial. Some people support that, some people don't. But some of the research that our colleagues WUNC and WFAE have done, and other people have been looking into this in other states, shows that in many, many cases, these were students who were already going to private school, and this is just sort of a tax rebate for the families. Now, some people would argue that's perfectly fine, but a lot of the arguments we heard in favor of the voucher system early on was that this would help family have more educational choice. And that hasn't really played out based on the data that we've seen. And I think the argument we hear on the left from more progressive or school advocates is often that this would probably be less of a pain point if we weren't looking at all these other funding shortfalls in public schools. If our public school was fully funded, we had all the nurses we needed, all the teachers we needed, all the capital needs we need to address, put a pin in that, then I don't think as many people would be upset about the voucher program.
I mean, some of these are religious-based schools. They can be selective about their student body as well. And, you know, proponents of private schools, they will see the per-pupil spending for public school students. I mean, that is still higher than what they get for the refund from the vouchers. And again, the legislature did put income caps on accessing those money for families, but they did recently knock those caps. So if you earn $1 million a year, you can still access some money, about $4,000. But here's Chris Barnes, Dr. Barnes, talking about why he feels that the system is unfair.
You're never going to know that for sure until you make sure that private schools and charter schools have to operate by the same standards that public schools do.
Yes.
And when charter schools and private schools have the ability to exclude some children, mm-hmm. it is not a level playing field.
So you heard board member Pat Bradford emphatically seconding Barnes' point there.
Yes, and it's interesting because Bradford is very vocal about giving funding to public schools, but I asked her about the county tax rate, and she was happy with that. And she believes in school choice as well, but she's saying that the state needs to find and provide for the public schools as well. And I did interview them together because they are working on a lot of these funding issues together.
Right. And I will just say a quick note, probably for a whole other podcast for another time, is that even if public schools were fully funded and the voucher program was still running and everyone was kind of copacetic with the situation, I still think journalists would have an obligation to look at what was going on in those private schools that were now getting public money. Because anywhere public money goes, Sunshine should follow. So just food for thought.
That's right. And I mean, I did a story earlier this year and none of the private schools would talk to me about how they assess their students or what their scores were, except for one of the private schools who gave me some data. But that's what Dr. Barnes is arguing. If you're going to compete in a fair system, everyone should know everybody's metrics because the public school metrics are constantly being talked about. And then we know that some families can't go to charter schools because there isn't lunch, there's not busing provided. So he's seeing like a market imbalance.
All right. Well, I want to put a pin in this conversation with my colleague Rachel Keith for just a moment because we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more about funding for public schools in New Hanover County. We've been talking about state funding, and when we come back, I want to talk about local funding. I'm Ben Shackman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shackman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm back now with my colleague Rachel Keith as we continue to unpack the funding challenges being faced by New Hanover County schools. All right, so I want to move on now to local funding. This is from the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners, approves that as part of their budget every year. That is the second largest tranche of money that goes into the school district. All of the commissioners that we spoke to, we interviewed all but one, Bill Reifenbach, who didn't respond to our interview requests. But our door is still open. The other four commissioners, two Republicans, two Democrats, all said that school funding was important to them. And when they were doing across-the-board cuts, meaning every department in the county that was getting cut, they exempted the sheriff's office and the school district. And so a lot of people thought, okay, by and large, setting aside capital, because that was a different issue, and they did not give all the capital funding the school wanted. But as far as operating funding, most of the process, you know, starting in February and running through May, it looked like the school district was going to get what it had basically asked for. And then in the last couple of weeks, there were some, you know, more intense deliberations about how low conservatives could bring the tax rate. They wanted to get as close to revenue neutral as possible, meaning government is not spending more this year than it was last year. And then in a flurry of activity, leading right up to the final vote, a final budget that made some deep cuts, including to the school district. This was released on a Wednesday night. On Thursday, there was an agenda review meeting. So, you know, we had some people in the press, some people in the county were seeing this budget for the first time. Democratic commissioners Rob Zappel and Stephanie Walker were seeing some of this stuff for the very first time. And I'll just do our disclosure note here that Rob Zappel is a member of our board of directors, but he has no say in editorial decisions, and we didn't consult with him in any way for this podcast. But a lot of people were blindsided by this budget, and there were some things in this budget that directly impacted the school district.
Yes, and it equates to about $5 million, and we'll get into what that was. And yes, and here is Stephanie Walker, and I talked to her after the budget vote when I found out about this $5 million hole that was very sudden for the school district.
And I was very much against this budget. I think it cuts too deep on multiple fronts. But with the schools concerned, they can't take many more cuts, or they can't take any more cuts. They're in a position where they can't, you know, raise their own funds. So where else can they turn to? And I think the county government should be at least there for them and the families of our county and the children in this county. They should be able to count on us for support.
So there's a lot of places where these cuts showed up. It wasn't just one overall cut. There were specific line items that basically got cut. And I want to unpack each of them because it's a little bit complicated. And I want to start with nurses. So this is something that the county provides some funding for, and these are nurses in schools.
Yeah, so the policy before this budget vote was to have one nurse per school, and they are provided by the county. And they basically, because of this budget, they had to cut $1.6 million out of that fund, and that meant a loss of 14 school nurses. So that means that schools are going to have to share. Of course, when I found this out, I said, what is the plan? They said they are working on it, and this does come from the county health department. So the schools are listening to their plan. So they're the one working on that plan. They say that they're collaborating and working on it, but it technically is the HHS director, John Campbell's job to figure out how to allocate these nurses.
Okay, so another issue is a $2.3 million supplement. Now, this was, correct me if I'm wrong, this was money that was provided by the state and is kind of pegged to the wealth of a county. I mean, this in broad terms. This is not the exact technical specs. But when New Hanover County did its revaluation last year, it increased property values across the board somewhere around 67%, a dramatic, significant increase in the value of property.
$80 billion.
Yes. And because of that, the state's saying, okay, well, you're a wealthier county now, at least on paper. And so the state is going to provide less of this supplement.
Eventually, they did not. They did not give them the additional $2.3 million that they needed to fill this hole. So as of now, I believe they're going to talk about it next week. They have not established where this is going to come from.
One more quick thing that kind of snuck by some people and you've looked into is a loss of about, I think it was $500,000, and this is for at-risk students.
Yes. So basically, the county statistics showed that we don't have as many students in poverty as compared to last year, so we lost those funds. But then I asked Dr. Barnes about this, and he said that doesn't mean that the needs have gone away. We still needed those funds. We still have very vulnerable students.
Another issue that you've covered a lot was a loss of almost $1 million, I think it was $975,000, for pre-K classrooms. These aren't the only pre-K classrooms that the school has. The county was basically funding 12, and there are other ones beyond that. But the part that the county funded, 6 had been around for a long time. And during COVID, again, that ARPA money that we've been talking about, the county used some of that to double the number, basically, of classrooms. About 108 additional pre-K students were now getting to go to pre-K. And this is something that had been something that, you know, policymakers wanted to do, but they had just never made it a budget priority. And that included under Republican and Democratic-led county commissions. But with that ARPA money, like we said, there were a lot of things that they had always wanted to do that now they could. And the ARPA money ran out basically during the last budget cycle. And so this budget cycle, for many of the iterations that we saw, including County Manager Chris Coudray's initial proposal and then kind of a compromise budget that Bill Rivenbark, Rob Zappel, and Stephanie Walker were on board with, all included basically picking up the tab and making this a regular.
Yes, and then the night before when you're talking about that vote, it evaporated. And so what was passed was the cut of those classrooms. And so Dr. Barnes had to scramble and figure out some ideas to cover that. And a very controversial idea was to close Mary Washington Howe. And the community said, no, you are not taking this school from us. We need to keep it open. The board listened. And so what Dr. Barnes did was he found money in Title I funds, which are carryover funds, which are federal funds for schools that have higher concentrations of low-income families. And so this chunk of money he was planning to divvy out to school Title I schools based on a formula. And he was telling them, you're likely going to get these funds, but they were not promised. So he found a way to do a stopgap for next year for those 108 students, but he doesn't know what they're going to do after next year. And again, those Title I schools, they thought maybe they could maybe hire a new person or do something special for the school that they needed or buy new materials. They can't do those with those additional funds. So once you patch a hole, you know, that's a loss somewhere else.
Exactly, yeah. And we should note that Mary Washington Howe serves a lot of Black and Hispanic students, and the Black community, in particular the NAACP of New Hanover County, organized a meeting, and Democratic and Republican school board members.
Yes.
In fact, in my opinion, too many, because I think they actually formed a quorum. The district disagrees with me, but I think they accidentally held a public meeting illegally because they didn't sort of notice it. But they should get credit because they did go, and they were kind of walking into the lion's den because this was a very unpopular suggestion. But the board members went, and they listened to the community. And like you said, they were able to sort of come up with a one-year stopgap. So credit where it's due.
Yes, and that was Republicans Pete Wildebohr and Pat Bradford and David Perry, and then Democrat Dr. Tim Merrick, they were all there. And the community was hard on them. But they also said, thank you for just coming here. And thank you for listening to us. So that goes a long way.
But you did speak to people who work in the pre-K world who are really concerned about this issue long term.
Yes, I did talk to Jane Morrow of New Hanover County's Smart Start. She's the executive director that does a lot of work with preschools in our county.
From Smart Start's point of view, is unfortunate. We're glad that the school system said we can keep those classrooms open for at least another year. Very appreciative of the dedication that the school board had towards those young children. But, you know, that's how long in the future can they continue to support that?
And if you've been following the pre-K discussion, I mean, I reported last year they lost the federal Head Start grant, which was millions of dollars. So the federal money went goodbye. And then we have this local funding loss. And then we have Dr. Barnes saying consistently that NC Pre-K, which now is the only funding source that they have, is not adequate for what they want to do. So that state funding is not what they need. And he points out constantly that per student, private sites get way more funds than public sites do. And that's because they think that they've got to take care of operational and admin costs that the public schools already have built in, or facilities, for example.
So, and I know we'll talk about the endowment later in the show, but I do want to say that you and I both spoke with the communications director at the endowment, basically asking them about pre-K funding. And that's because when the county decided it was no longer going to fund nonprofits, or non-county agencies, as they're called, there was a $1.6 million package that had already been approved by the county's committee that basically vets all of these nonprofits, run by John Hennett, who's also the chair of the local county GOP. So they'd been through all this process, it had been approved, and a lot of nonprofits kind of assumed that money was coming their way. That was cut out of that overnight budget. And the endowment, who had kind of been reading the tea leaves and seeing where this was going, did step in with kind of an emergency grant, $1.6 million, again, just for 1 year. But they moved very quickly. They delivered the funding. I know a lot of people in the nonprofit world, including us, who were very relieved to see that. But it begged the question, if the endowment can move that fast, right, and just plug $1.6 million budget hole, could they not plug a $975,000 budget hole for pre-K? And the endowment's official response was, you know, we don't substitute government funding. We can only supplement. And I think a lot of people in the community have pushed back, saying there's been a lot of places where that logic has looked a little fuzzy. People have pointed to the money that went to the new Fort Fisher Aquarium overhaul. They've funded a number of school programs. They did the nursing pipeline, which puts money into New Hanover County schools, Cape Fear Community College, UNCW.
Yeah, and remember the allocation for UNCW was $10 million and around the same amount for CFCC.
So it's not as if they have not put in significant seven- or eight-figure funding into other government institutions. So they disagree with us, and I think they disagree with people in the community, but that is certainly a question people have asked.
And they did fund one literacy coach per elementary school. So they have continued that 3 years of funding. And I think the pitch, and we'll talk about this later, is let's do the funding, let's do the pilot so that potentially the government will pick this up eventually. Yeah. Because that's what they're saying. It's not a consistent money flow.
Yeah, and I will just note, the endowment is very fond of pointing at its founding documents when questions like this come up, questions about, you know, doing government funding or spending money outside of New Hanover County. The founding documents include a whole list of suggestions. These are not, you know, guidelines. These are not official recommendations. They're just like illustrations of things the endowment can do. But one of them is universal pre-K.
Right. And you and I know, and the community knows, yes, they cannot replace government, but they can supplement. Yeah. And they have done that on several occasions.
All right. So moving on, I want to round out our conversation about operating budget here with two other issues that we've heard a lot about, and that is the fund balance and the allotment formula. So let's talk about the fund balance just for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Barnes and Pat Bradford, when I spoke to them for this this article about a deep dive on the funding, I mean, they're very upset that it's dwindling. Right now, it's about $2.2 million. And over the years, they've had to dwindle it down because of Hurricane Florence, because of that predicament we talked about, paying for the state raises or percent increases for retirement and health benefits have gone up. And so the commission are saying spend it down so that you can give these raises, so you can account for these additional funds that you have to pay for these locally funded positions. And now they feel like they're in a bad position, because what if something emergent happens and they can't release the funds right away? And the county says, we've got you. But then, you know, it's only for specific disaster related. It can't be for other types of emergencies that come up. And that makes them feel pretty vulnerable. And again, they want it, they're proud of that fund balance. They don't want to dip into it for all these other issues, but maybe they might have to. But they are towing the line that they want to keep this healthy and they'd like to grow it. But with all their needs, it's an interesting question.
Yeah. And so I want to get to this last issue now. And this is, I think a lot of people have pointed to the allotment formula. Again, this is how the state determines how much money it's going to chip in. And again, this is the largest chunk of money that goes to it.
And this is based on, you've got X number of students, I'm going to give you X number of positions for your school.
Right. And there's been a lot of arguments, and we've heard this from Republicans and Democrats, that if this got fixed, that we would be in much better. I'm not saying everything would be 100% perfect.
No.
But if you fixed this, then things would be much better for the school district.
Yeah, I mean, Barnes over and over again has said this formula has not changed in a decade. And so I talked to Representative Deb Butler, who mainly represents, she's a House representative for New Hanover County mainly. And I asked her, do you know about this allotment formula and how you could change it and how you could help change these numbers? Because this is what the school district is asking for.
But I can tell you that our students and our teachers are not receiving what they should be receiving. Our teachers, of course, are at the bottom of the barrel and again, not getting the pay that they deserve. And our per pupil spending is woefully inadequate. So however the formula, I mean, you know, you can alter a formula, but the bottom line has got to be more money into public education. And this voucher scheme needs to stop, because it is again, starving public education. And people can only be expected to do so much with so little.
She's saying, I'm ready to put more money into public education. And again, she wants to stop the voucher funding, because again, last year we saw $432 million going into the voucher program.
And you also spoke to John Hennett, who's the county GOP chair, to get sort of his take on this.
Yes, and he went with Pat Bradford and that finance committee, and he is on that committee, and he took a bunch of teachers and students to the General Assembly in the spring to advocate for changing this formula to give more money to the schools.
We were planting seeds. We weren't asking directly for money. We were planting seeds of things that need to be modernized, and what we heard back was this accountability model's got to be figured out.
And so this accountability model that he's talking about, there's actually an ask right now from the school system to the endowment, because he asked the county first and they said no. And then it's interesting, the county wouldn't even sign a letter in support of the endowment funding this. And what it was, every school gets one position and they get to decide what that position is. So what Dr. Barnes was going to do was look at these positions and do metrics associated with them to make the grounds of a pilot for the state. So he has the idea. It's just the idea is not being funded. And this is, you know, because the legislature asked, what's the model? What's the accountability? What's the return on investment? And he's thinking if this gets funded by the endowment, he could show that. But we have not heard if that funding has come through. And I believe it's around $4.2 million for those positions.
So that's kind of what we're looking at when it comes to funding for the district's operational costs. Obviously, the last piece of that puzzle is the federal funding. And we've had some reporting that that was frozen. I believe North Carolina Attorney General Jeff Jackson joined a lawsuit in part because of that. That money has been unfrozen. I think some people are still waiting for the official, like, you know, they want a piece of paper in their hand.
Yeah, that's what Dr. Barnes said to me when I put him to this. You know, do you feel like you've got the federal funds that you need? And he said, I'm not going to say anything until I get the actual paperwork in my hands that these funds are, in fact, released. And I will say, to end this operating budget discussion out, this $5 million hole, he might, if he doesn't get the funds he needs, he might need to cut 50 to 100 positions. He has not done this yet. He has said that several times. But if the state budget comes under, or maybe that 5% gets passed, or he can't find the money for the 2.3 state funding loss for the supplements, there might have to be some cuts. He keeps saying over and over again, last year he had to make over 300 cuts. So he is not happy with the funding and the support he's getting for the school district.
Yeah, and I'll say this as the last thing about the operational funding is that we saw some people sort of dismiss federal funding because it was, as some people say, only 6%. And yeah, that is a minority of their budget. It's a small portion of their budget, but it's a small portion of a over $300 million budget. So 6% is over $15 million, closer to $20 million. That's a lot of people, you know? And again, most of the money that goes to public schools goes to staff. So if you're cutting $18 million, $19 million, that's a lot of positions. And that is a problem that the school district has to figure out because they've gotten what money they're going to get from the county. It looks like they've more or less gotten what they're going to get from the state. And so now it's just internally moving things around, and there's just not a lot of give there. All right, well, we need to take one more quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with my colleague Rachel Keith to continue unpacking the funding situation for New Hanover County Public Schools. We've been talking about operational costs. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big one, capital funding. That's for facilities like New Hanover High School. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with my colleague Rachel Keith as we continue to unpack the funding challenges being faced by New Hanover County schools. Okay, so we've broken down operating budget. That's year over year, mostly paying staff. Then there's the whole other world of capital funding, which is buildings and campuses and all of the places and spaces that those faculty and staff work in.
Yeah, and that includes furniture and cars and electronics too, computers, iPads.
And if you thought the budgets for operating could be a little eye-watering, wait till you get to some capital figures.
It's, as a reporter and hearing over and over again at these meetings, all of the needs, and year after year, there's no funding stream for them. They're starting to add up. And the most recent list that the capital finance bond committee that the school district has, I mean, it lists $581 million in needs. And at the top of that list is New Hanover High School, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But on this list, it's $89 million budgeted, but we know that it's going to probably cost $230 million.
And that's one thing I think I want to plug into this conversation up front is that if you've been following any major capital needs story, whether that's the New Hanover High School or the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, you've seen extraordinary price increases.
Extraordinary.
And that's based on two things. One is inflation. And inflation played a major role in the growing budget cost of New Hanover High School and a lot of other projects around town. But it's also, as projects move along, they get more and more granular plans. And so an original sort of ballpark estimate doesn't really get into all the nitty-gritty of what's actually going to be needed. That's a huge part. And we're talking about like hundreds of millions of dollars when it came to the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. People ask, how did this go from a half billion to 1.1 billion? Those two things, knowing more about what you're actually going to have to do and inflation. So those two things together drive up costs. So when you talk about a 2023 estimate, you can't really rely on that to be the real cost, especially if the project might not break ground until 2026. So when we get to New Hanover High School, I think one good thing that the design team has done is to start to build in some of that economic instability and just knowing that there's going to be some inflation.
Yes. And if you look at this list, and we can post this too, I mean, you've got Isaac Bear, $46 million. You've got building Riverlights. They've been talking about this for years. On this chart, it has $43 million. Pine Valley needs to be replaced, $4 million. Mary C. Williams also needs to be replaced, $45 million. Trask Middle School needs a new building. That is $78 million. And these, again, are old numbers. And what the county, I believe, did fund the district-wide facility survey. And so that's probably going to show about $1 billion instead of the $500 million in needs. So there's a lot to tackle. A lot of the conversation, rightfully so, has been around New Hanover because the county has had to constantly step in to do repairs. $3 million for Brogdon Hall, close to $9 million already for New Hanover High. And then now they know that they have to fix a lot of the school. And so it's at top of mind. But there are so many other needs in this district.
Yeah, and I want people to keep that in mind as we're talking about New Hanover High School. It is important for a number of reasons. It has been historically underinvested in. And that has been very frustrating for the downtown community, for the Black community, for alumni, for a lot of people. It is also a good way to understand how this process works and what we will probably be going through with other facilities. And it gives you a sense of how these costs increase and the cost of not doing anything about it. So for all those reasons, let's get into New Hanover High School.
Yeah, and if you look at my report, I mean, and we talked about this, I mean, there was a plan from 1999 that outlined a lot of these issues, and funding was an issue then.
I was kind of shocked when you dug that up just to see how, I don't know if prescient's the right word, but it's just like it identified things that we are now talking about a quarter century later.
Yes, and people at New Hanover have realized this, and this has really gotten pushed to the forefront because of this nonprofit that operates somewhat like a PTA at New Hanover High School, and it's led by Cassie Rempel and Allison McWhorter, and they presented to the school district several times about the importance of this, and they're called the New Hanover Advocates. And yes, there were three options for New Hanover High. It looks like they are going to choose this hybrid option where they're going to build new and then also do some replacement as well. And they're going to build that athletics compound that they've always wanted because they have to practice at like Legion Stadium and other places. They really don't have a home base for a lot of their athletics.
Yeah. And that's when I'm talking about that historic underinvestment. Like one of the most glaring examples have been sports teams at New Hanover High School who cannot have a home game, you know, which is like, if you don't care about high school sports, this means nothing to you. But if you're involved, like there's just something humiliating a little bit about not being able to have a home game, not to be able to win on your own home turf. That's just sad.
Yeah, and we're going to hear from Allison McWhorter in a second, but she says that all the time. She's hoping, since it's such a huge price tag, she's hoping that the whole community understands the needs, that they all need to support this, and that would eventually be a bond, and we will talk about this. But she said she understands that they're probably going to go with this hybrid option, but it's going to take a long time to do, and here she is.
You know, it's a 10 to 12 year investment. And I don't think that that is a reasonable solution or something that we need to ask the students of New Hanover High School to have to deal with. You know, if equity is a priority for our county, then it's got to be reflected in our capital investments. And putting it off over, I think the argument is, well, the money's not there. But putting it off over 12 years just increases the amount of money that taxpayers are going to have to spend in order to get it done.
So, I mean, again, Allison McWhorter is pointing out this idea of deferred maintenance and how much it has already cost at New Hanover High School, and again, how much it will cost at other facilities. But when we're talking about New Hanover High School, you know, as you mentioned, there were three plans. There was one that was basically just a rehab, and this would leave a lot of those issues identified way back in 1999 still unresolved. And that was, you know, we don't know what the final cost would be, somewhere around $130, $140 million ballpark. And then there was a plan, one possible plan, to purchase new land, which would include, I believe, over $30 million. That's speculative because we don't actually know where they're going to buy. But if you've been on the market looking for a home in the Wilmington area, you know property's not cheap. And that would be closer to $280 million, maybe more. And I think that one was just too rich for a lot of people's blood. So the hybrid program we're talking about does involve some new construction. It does involve an athletics facility and some serious rehab to the existing facility. I believe they've scrapped potential parking deck that might have been part of that. So regardless of which plan they end up going with, and we all kind of think that the hybrid plan is going to get the nod, it's going to be very expensive. And people have said, well, you know, we'll just do a school bond. But it is not that simple because the county only has so much financial capacity. People sometimes just think, oh, yeah, the government can borrow money. But even counties have credit limits. So we talked to the county's chief financial officer who kind of laid this out for us right now. And as of right now, at the end of the fiscal year that just ended, their debt capacity was $94 million because they are involved in a lot of other programs. They've already taken out these loans, basically.
Including the schools.
Including the schools. And but they're, you know, they're paying them back through the budget every year. And so as we go forward, I believe it'll be $131 million by the end of next year and $175 million by the end of 2028. So as they're paying off old projects, they can take out new bonds. And right now, that sort of credit limit, I know that's not exactly how it works, but it's analogous to a credit limit, is based on the county's own policy, which is pegged to the number of people in the county. So it's for every person in New Hanover County, they can basically borrow $2,200. And they could change that because, Rachel, you and I looked at some other counties around the state, and there are other places that have much more significant loan balances, so to speak.
Yeah, and you said that they're looking to change this, possibly, this policy so that they can put a larger amount on this bond ask so they can get more projects done that the public is saying needs to be done.
Exactly, yeah. So that could change. Again, we don't know what kind of financial advice they're going to get, but they're at least looking at it. And this hybrid plan, as you heard Allison McWhorter talk about, would come over 10 to 12 years in different phases. So one possibility would be a series of school bonds in the $60, $70, $80 million range every 2 years, because you can only put a bond on the ballot so people can vote on it. It has to be countywide, so it has to be an even year. It can't be an odd year. So you could put one on the 26, one on the 28, one on the 30, and so on and so forth. One of the concerns we've heard about that is, what if we get halfway through the hybrid project and people lose the political will? What if the economic fortunes change? What if the financial winds shift? And say in 28, people are like, yeah, you know, we're in a recession or we're in an economic downturn and we don't really feel like our tax rate going up. And then you've partially completed the project. The design team has said it's designed to be kind of modular so that each phase you could finish and it wouldn't leave students like stranded in trailers, for example. As you've reported, that's what happened during the recent repairs to New Hanover High School. But I do think there's just some broader concern that, well, if we do it in phases, it lowers the pain sort of threshold for each bond, but it's less of a guarantee the whole project will get done.
Yeah, and of course, if the maintenance and the problems have not been fixed for decades, you know, the community is saying, like Alice McWhorter is saying, like, you need to find all this money now and get it done now. But as we know, you know, there's a lot to be fixed. And we have people like Dane Scalise and Chris Kudrag. Dane Scalise is one of the Republican commissioners, saying, like, the reality of the financials of the debt policy, that we will probably have to spread this over a long period of time. But people like Alice McWhorter are saying, pushing back on that, you got to find the money somewhere else. And so where would you find it? And it's interesting, when I looked in the Governor Josh Stein's proposed budget, which, again, the House and the Senate are the ones calling the shots here, but he had a statewide bond for voters to vote on for facilities for over 100 school districts we have in our state. And in this allocation, New Hanover County would have gotten $61 million. So it's going to have to be a little more creative to find these funds. We know that the endowment came in behind the aquarium to finish that. Could that be a possibility? Are they going to up the debt limit to get these funds that they need? And again, it's not just New Hanover. That's millions and millions of dollars. It's several other buildings.
Absolutely, yeah. So the endowment has said that it would like to be last dollars in a project. But if there was a way where they could craft the bond in such a way that it, you know, provided most of the funding. And again, we've said costs are rising all the time. Maybe that's a place the endowment could step in and help deal with overruns. We don't know. We don't know what the political will of the endowment board will be. We don't know what things will look like in a couple of years. But we do know, and I hope we've laid out on today's show, that there are only so many places that the money can come from. It can come from the local government, the county. It can come from the state. It can come from the feds. The endowment is a little bit of a question mark now, and we don't know what they will feel like in the future. I know that there are some people on the endowment board who feel like, because the IRS will require them to start spending more money, not that they haven't been spending money already, they've been putting a lot of money into the community, but they will have to increase that to somewhere north of $80 million every year. There are some people on the endowment board who've said there is no way. In fact, board member Woody White has said publicly on Twitter, on X, that without working with the government, There's no way that they can put that much money out every year. I don't know if that will mean the school district specifically, but we could see a change in how they view that supplement for a substitution. So there are other places where money can come from for some of these issues. There are always nonprofits, communities and schools, it's a good example, who are trying to provide some wraparound services. There's churches and temples and mosques that can provide things like childcare and after school programs. But when we're talking to the big picture, the big chunks of money, I think we've laid it all out. But before we go, I want to touch on a few things that people bring up that don't seem like, at least in the pragmatic short term, like answers to this funding problem. A big one, I have to say, is the Leandro case. So, Rachel, for people who have not followed along at home at all, what is the Leandro case?
It was a case that said that every child deserves a basic sound education. And basically, it was a suit that was brought by some rural districts, families living in rural communities, and saying, we need more money to educate these students. And so it's a long story, but I mean, basically, it looks like some of the funds were about, and there was this big plan. There was this big remedial plan that experts independently worked on to say how much it would cost to provide that basic education, that sound education. And again, it was high dollar amounts that needed to go into the schools. There's been some back and forth between the courts and the legislature about, are you going to fund it, yes or no? Currently, it looks like the legislature is saying the courts cannot tell us what to do. We do not have to release these funds. Even Senator Michael Lee has said in the past that we've funded part of those plans, you know, and it doesn't seem like there's an appetite for the state Supreme Court is controlled by the Republicans and the General Assembly is controlled by the Republicans. And it doesn't look like they're going to release those funds. And I know it's been quoted around $51 million that New Hanover County would receive if Leandro funds were released.
And that's in annual funding.
And so,
and of course, you know, people point to the previously Democratic-run Supreme Court when they had a majority of Democratic judges on there did approve this, right? So it has flipped. It could flip again. And this is not to disparage advocates, and we know there are many in our community who are pushing for the Leandro plan to be realized, for that funding to be released. You know, we've heard some suggestions that maybe the state comptroller could just kind of break the rules and just release the money anyway. I don't know if we want to take the guardrails off the rules of how we operate the state, regardless of whether or not we think it's a good idea. But at the end of the day, if we're talking about this year's funding problem, if we're talking about the short-term political reality of North Carolina, where Republicans do control the General Assembly and the Supreme Court, I don't think you can just hope that Leandro will come into existence and pay for teachers and nurses and massive, you know, facility rehab and replacement programs. I think you've got to be a little bit more realistic. If we're talking about what the school board can do and what Christopher Barnes can do with this year's budget and next year's budget, you've got to be more practical. And I know that I'm being a cloud and raining on people's parade a little bit, but that's what Barnes has to work with right now. And I think it's important to be sympathetic and tuned into that.
Yeah, I think school districts are doing symbolic things. Like, they have passed resolutions to stop the voucher funds. They have passed, next week, it is Rebecca Trammell, she started I Am Leandro, and she is going to talk to the school board about passing probably a resolution to get them to support these funds. That's probably symbolic. We have Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools that just asked the legislature to release $46 million in funding holes that they have for their school district. So they asked for that, but it's, again, probably symbolic. I don't know if the political will is there to unleash more funds for public schools at this point.
Yeah, I will say, long term, I think if we are consistently hearing from bipartisan or even Republican-controlled school boards that this is an issue, that they need more funding, that, remember, everyone in the General Assembly gets elected every 2 years. And so this issue is going to be on the campaign trail, and it's going to be on the ballot box, basically, for voters. So if it is clearly the will of a majority of people, I think you obviously could see a change. So I'm not disparaging that. I'm just saying a resolution passed today won't fix a budget that we started working on last month.
And I believe independent political analysts, the state is somewhat gerrymandered in the favor of Republicans. And so how much change can be made? How responsive are these legislators to their voters when there's not much challenge or they have a district that is safe?
Yeah, I mean, gerrymandering is always going to be an issue. I think we have heard that in 2030, they have to finally go back to the drawing board with new maps for legislative districts. And so we could see some change there. But again, all of that on the horizon. One other quick note I want to make before we wrap this up is that we also hear about education lottery. And, you know, people say, like, what about the education lottery? What about the education lottery? And you crunch the numbers and it's just not that much.
No. Last year, the school district, and you can only use it for capital, you got $1.8 million. And that's typically the allotment that they're going to get each year. And a lot of those funds go into the General Assembly to decide what to do with those funds. I mean, very little trickles down to the school districts for the education lottery.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about a $230 million project, I'm not going to say no. I don't think the school district would say no to $2 million, but it's certainly not going to solve any problem. So the last thing I think I want to talk about just for a moment is that people have suggested that if we could get more students back into public schools, whether they were being homeschooled or going to a private school or attending a charter school, that if we could get them back into the traditional public schools, that could be a solution.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously the legislature does base funding on per pupil attendance. So they look at those attendance numbers constantly, the enrollment numbers, because higher enrollments mean more money. And again, the district took a huge hit. So did school districts all across the state after COVID, huge drops in enrollment. But then over the last 3 or 4 years, they have stagnated at a similar level. But this year, since they unleashed a lot more funds for the private schools, the numbers officially have not come out yet for our school district when I looked on NCDPI's website, but we're starting to hear that that's starting to decrease a little more. So it's yet to be determined if the public school can advocate for that case to come back to the public school system so that they can be well-funded.
Well, I hope that this has provided some people with at least a 30,000-foot view of what is going on with school funding. Obviously, there's a lot of very intricate, granular things we didn't get to. But for now, Rachel Keith, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my colleague Rachel Keith and to WHQR's program director, Ken Campbell. If you missed any part of this show, you can find it at whqr.org or as a podcast. Most places you can find podcasts. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk, Blue Dot Sessions, The OJs, and, how could I not, Pink Floyd. If you have any comments, concerns, or ideas for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening. And I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.